Now, on BBC Radio 4, scenes from student life, this time the life of medical students, and 7 years of violent protests centred around a small brown dog, as Ellie Cawthorne hears from the science historian Charlotte Connolly in London's Battersea Park.
Ha ha ha, hee hee hee, little brown dog, how we hate thee. Ha ha ha, hee hee hee, little brown dog, how we hate thee.
In 1903, physiologist William Bayliss performed an experiment on a small brown terrier dog to demonstrate the workings of the hormone system in front of an audience of 60 medical students from University College London. Two students from the nearby London School of Medicine for Women, rarities in those days, attended the lecture and were appalled. They were convinced that Bayliss's vivisection was a cruel violation of the 1876 legislation regulating animal experimentation.
So vivisection is a means of doing research on animals, and it's related to dissection, but with vivisection the animals are still alive. They argued that it wasn't anaesthetised, that it was not the first procedure that had been carried out on the dog.
What happened as a consequence of this?
Well, they published a book called The Shambles of Science, which got quite well known, and then following that they made a statement as well, which was read out at a meeting by a gentleman called Stephen Coleridge.
Stephen Coleridge was a prominent anti-vivisection campaigner and co-founder of the NSPCC. Bayliss sued Coleridge for libel and won, but nevertheless, the case hit the headlines and became a public cause célèbre.
Because Coleridge had been found guilty, he had to pay a massive fine, and there was a big national shout out for people to pay subscriptions, and they raised far more money than they could use for the fine. So this and various other things fed into a campaign to erect a memorial to the brown dog that would stand for all animals that are vivisected in this way. And that's what then went on to be erected in Latchmere Park, as it was then, in Battersea.
So we're here in Battersea Park now, but the memorial that we're looking at is not the one that was erected in 1906. What happened to that one?
The brown dog memorial really became the icon of the battle between the vivisectionists and the anti-vivisectionists, and the statue was marched on by students. They tried to vandalise it, and in consequence of that, it ended up having a police guard at one point. And actually, it was removed in the dead of night in March of 1910, and was later destroyed.
Science historian Charlotte Connolly. It was not only the rights and wrongs of animal experimentation at stake here, but crucially, the manner and methodology of medical education. On the 10th of December 1907, events reached a chaotic peak. After several students had been arrested and fined for disruptive behaviour, 1,000 pro-vivisection medical students marched through London, angrily waving effigies of the brown dog. They clashed with police and a diverse crowd of animal rights supporters.
So there were the feminists, suffragists, there were trade unionists and workers and locals as well. Why do you think so many people were happy to rally together against the medical students?
I don't know if it would be too simplistic to say that we're a nation of dog lovers, but that's got to be in there somewhere, surely.
Carol Reeves, senior lecturer in science and technology at University College London, suggests that public anger at the brown dog vivisection fits into a much bigger picture of contemporary fears about scientific experimentation.
The book by H.G. Wells, which was published in 1896, called The Island of Dr. Moreau, had given anti-vivisectionists the idea that what were the limits of vivisection, because the story was based around a scientist on an island who was creating humans from animals on the island called beast folk. And it was quite influential because people began to think, if scientists, physiologists can do this to animals, they might well do this to humans as well.
The behaviour of the medical students during and after the experiment did nothing to help matters. In fact, it provoked public anger even further. So, who were these students?
Medical students in the early 20th century were mostly male. They were rather more gung-ho, as could be seen in their attitudes to the brown dog riots, when they would infiltrate the court case by setting off firecrackers and blowing horns and setting off stink bombs, racing down to Trafalgar Square, waving banners and shouting and screaming and knocking people out of the way.
Until 1858, there was no unified system of training doctors. They learnt through courses in Oxford and Cambridge, on the job on naval warships, or as apprentices to an apothecary. It's no surprise then that medical treatment could be pretty hit and miss. Geoffrey Rivette, a retired doctor originally from the north of England, studied medicine at UCL, then at Oxford in the 1950s.
It was not until 1858 that you could tell who was a doctor and who was not a doctor. Anybody could put up a plate and say, I am a doctor. I qualified at the University of Outer Space, pay the money, and I will do my best. There's no regulation of what training was.
The General Medical Council began standardising the medical syllabus in 1855 and introduced medical examinations 3 years later. Until then, the training of doctors varied widely, and they could be taught some strange, literally prehistoric topics.
In the 1850s, you had to study the dentition of the mastodon because people were interested in fossils, and part of the science was fossil antiquity.
How was that seen as relevant to the human body?
Possibly it wasn't. Does that matter? It's a very traditional profession. If you asked most informed people at what point in time the medical profession as a whole did more good than harm, the answer would be around about 1900. It would be as late as that.
So for those medical students in 1903, the riots were not only about vivisection. They were also a fight to protect hard-won scientific standards. Central to this improvement in medical standards was the introduction of the laboratory, or Parisian, medical model. Carol Reeves again.
Before the 19th century, most patients, if they saw a doctor at all, would see a doctor at their bedside. So the doctor would make a personal visit to them. And then you got these huge hospitals, particularly in Paris, which were constructed after the end of the French Revolution. And they had thousands of patients. And they could train new medical students in a fantastic way by allowing access to patients while they were sick, and then after they died, to use their bodies for dissection so that they could explore what had gone on in life and what had made the patient sick. So this was a new idea. And then gradually towards the middle of the 19th century, there came the idea that you shouldn't be looking at the dead body because you wouldn't learn anything about what was going on in life. So the concept of experimental physiology in the laboratory became important as a place of learning. A lot of this work was done in France. So important people like Claude Bernard and Louis Pasteur, they were working with live animals in order to see how the body worked, and that's experimental physiology. And they would call their laboratories their ghastly kitchen.
What you're saying is that by kind of advocating vivisection of live animals, the medical students in the Brown Dog Affair were kind of, they saw themselves as on the side of progress.
Yes, they certainly did see themselves on the side of progress. They didn't want that jeopardised because the laboratory was not only a teaching space for students, for medical students, but also for biomedical scientists who were a new breed of scientists. This is the first time that people could train as biomedical scientists in the laboratory. With laboratory science, you get the idea that students use the laboratory as part of their learning process, and it's as important to be to understand what's going on in the laboratory as it is to understand what's going on in the hospital. And in fact, at this very moment that the Brown Dog Affair was happening, medical students were spending their first 2 years of their training becoming biomedical scientists. So they didn't go anywhere near patients until they'd done this basic bioscience training for the first 2 years. And this is exactly how medical students are trained today.
When we do dissection in first year, the body has been preserved with formaldehyde. So it's sort of shiny and hard and doesn't look quite like a real person in the first place. And in one of the first sessions, we actually remove the head, and that makes the whole thing quite a lot easier in terms of detaching yourself from the person. I've heard stories in the past of people taking the arms from the bodies and using it to hand over bus money and such like, but that kind of thing doesn't happen anymore. Nowadays, they